Thank you for joining me for the Public Narrative Podcast. I'm your host, Jamira Alexander, and I'm joined here with representatives from Guitars Over Guns. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yes. So, Andrew, we've connected some time ago, but if you would tell the folks a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I'm Andrew DeMuro. I'm a professional musician. I'm an educator. And for the past 7 years, I've been part of the leadership team here in Chicago for Guitars Over Guns. For 6 years, I was the regional director of our Chicago programs, and just this year, I took on a new role nationally that works with our programs in Miami and Chicago and Los Angeles. So now I'm the director of program quality, which means I take a leading role in writing our curriculum, in maintaining and developing professional leadership opportunities for our musicians nationally, and I get to answer that big question: is what we're doing actually working?
Yeah.
Which is an important one for me.
Yeah. Well, is what they're doing, is it actually working?
Yes, of course it's working.
Wow, we went there that
quick. That quick, right?
Okay.
So do share about yourself, Danny.
My name is Danny. I've been with Guitars Over Guns for about 2 years.
Yeah.
About
yeah.
2 years. I met Andrew. Walking into like a wrong classroom.
Yeah.
and then he was really welcoming. And I said, might as well stick around for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm a musician.
That was 2 years ago.
I play guitar, I sing, play some other instruments too, but yeah, that's pretty much all it is. Mm-hmm.
So help me understand exactly, like I heard of Guitars Over Guns even before we met, but I never fully understood what it did. And frankly, I used to get it confused with intonation music, I think.
Yeah. So there's a lot of similarities. I'll let you explain. I'll share just kind of a couple sentences,
sure.
And then I'll let you explain what that wrong turn into the right room looked like for you.
Okay.
So it just in a couple of sentences, what Guitars Over Guns does is it provides access to music education and a caring adult mentor to kids in Chicago public schools. So we hire, train, and professionally develop local musicians in our community. We train them in social emotional learning best practices, and then they go into classrooms and serve as mentors to kids. You know, we've been through a lot in the last several years.
Yeah.
Music is a thing that has universally kind of made our lives better. And I think professional musicians and artists have this kind of unique power to connect, particularly with young people who may have been written off as too tough to connect with through our craft. And then, you know, Danny will tell you, maybe you can tell them, you kind of shared why you showed up that day and it was a mistake, right?
Mm-hmm.
But why did you decide to come back?
Honestly, when it came down to like coming back again, at first it was very like intimidating. I don't really talk to like many people about like my music or anything like that, but I thought it felt like Andrew really like wanted to hear, and like these my mentors and everybody there wanted to like really listen and really take the time out of their day to like actually like show that they wanted to hear me. So that's why I came back pretty like over and over again.
Well, I'd love to hear you. Do you mind playing something for us?
Yeah, sure.
You're ready, right?
Yeah.
So something Danny didn't mention yet is that he's also a really gifted songwriter. So are you gonna play an original?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
You want to tell us what it's called and maybe a little bit about it?
This song is called Too Good. I made this song with one of my friends. His name is Fable. We recorded this in a studio. It's mostly about just knowing like your self-worth about like maybe this person didn't treat you that well, but you were like too good for them, so yeah.
Take your advice.
find some better that would treat me right. My self-control with you, missed out, so why am I on the ground? I'm moving on while you're still on us. Was it so hard?
Beautiful. Have you always had a heart for music?
Ever since I was little, yeah. Uh-huh. Ever since I was little, I would, with my parents, I'd always be singing in the car. Because, like, with the radio, like, Kiss FM and stuff like that. We would always, my parents would always, like, turn it up, and I would always just, like, you know, just let loose. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And instruments, like, when did instruments become a part of your experience?
Oh, it was always on and off with drums. Mm-hmm. I was at first I started off with drums, took some lessons, realized it wasn't for me. So then I was just finding inspiration to find a new instrument, mm-hmm. and that's when guitar came around. Obviously, my like influences, like really, like play the guitar and like they would play shows. I was like, I want to do that. Like mm-hmm. I want to do what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So I picked it up and I just started learning their songs, and I got fast pretty quick. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's where I picked up my guitar.
So what is the timing? Around you picking up the guitar and then stumbling into the wrong yet right room?
Well, I started with the guitar when I was 15. Like during like my sophomore year, mm-hmm. freshman year actually. Like in the middle of my freshman year, and I was only playing for like, I'd like to say like 5-6 months. And then I entered the wrong room, which was the right room. But yeah, and so I was only playing like 5 months when I met my mentors, IHOG.
So what was happening when Danny stumbled into the right room?
Well, so Danny's...
I was early, right?
I don't know if you've ever Nobody been early into then. Anything.
Oh. No, I was early for that time, I remember.
So we were at Curie. Which is where he goes to school, and we had a brand new program at Curie High School that we actually started there because we work at one of the middle schools up the street, Evergreen Academy. That's where I started with the organization 6 or 7 years ago, and we started a program at Curie that the crux of it was we want to reach some of the 8th grade graduates in our program at Evergreen who are moving on to high school at Curie and having not the same musical experience that they were used to in our program. We want to train them, we want to pay them a stipend, and we want to send them back to their middle school to be peer mentors to kids who are in the program now. Mm-hmm. And so we had kind of a small cohort, and this was like right when school went back in person as well, right? So we had kind of a small cohort of students who we already knew who joined our program from day one, and we were trying to build something special around them, and we knew that Curie's a school that has a pretty rich musical history, but you know, as a lot of schools are, after the pandemic, they're kind of finding their way again and figuring out what works for our kids now. And Danny was one of those kids who already went there, who we didn't have a relationship with yet, but right away kind of walked in, and you say you're shy, you don't really talk to people, but you told us a lot about you on that first day, and
I don't really remember that first day.
A lot about your music, And you were ready to play for us right away and ready to say, like, well, I'm going to be famous and really? I want people to hear me. Yeah, you did. And that, well, that's why I wanted to keep you around, because I was like, it's going to take a little bit more than saying it. Mm-hmm. But right away recognized his gift. And I think that next day I came back and I was like, we're going to write a group song together in a day. And we did.
Yeah.
And you played. Mm-hmm. So he was one of the kind of like people who I could just kind of dictate chords to, and he would know how to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, with a kid like Danny, who's got a gift, oftentimes I see things kind of playing on two sides of the spectrum. You either have a gift or you've got grit.
Yeah.
And you've got both of, like, everyone has both of those things, but Danny's was a little out of whack this way to this way, and we're trying to find that balance between how do you channel your gift into something, into a goal that's really, really tangible for you, and that's kind of what we're working on now. That's why I bring him to opportunities like this.
Yeah. No, that's outstanding. Help me understand how you came into this work.
Well, I think it all starts... It all starts in childhood, right? Mm-hmm. I'm on a couch, so I might as well be talking to like a therapist. So I was fortunate. I grew up in a small town in New Jersey, about 50 miles from New York, 50 miles from Philadelphia, and was fortunate to have music education be part of my life every year growing up in school. The biggest difference for me was I had a teacher who... saw something in me before, you know, I was realized enough to figure it out for myself. And one of my earliest memories from school is I was 8 years old and she pulled me aside. I was like you, the kid singing in the car, not really knowing that what I was doing was special or unique or anything. And she pulled me aside and said, I'm starting a choir for fourth and fifth graders. Mm-hmm. And you've got to audition to be part of it, but I really want you to do it. And I told her no. And because in my infinite wisdom, I was going to become a baseball player. And so I didn't have time for music because I was busy practicing my skills. You know how tall I grew up to be. So baseball was never really in the cards for me, but she was persistent and she was creative. And she did what would convince any 8-year-old, I think, to do what she wanted me to do, which was she recruited my best friend to join the group. And so he said he was gonna audition, so I said, all right, fine, I'll do it. And from that year on, I was an 8-year-old who felt like I had a purpose. And I can't imagine, I mean, I might have found music anyway, but I can't imagine.
Sure.
I can't imagine what my life would have been like if I had even got on the bus a couple stops down the road.
Sure.
So on top of that, I grew up in a house where both of my parents were public school teachers. And so I realized and understood at a very young age the value of education. Music was always a part of my life, but when I went to college to study, I was an education major. Mm-hmm. And when I graduated, I moved here to start my first teaching job at a charter school on the west side of Chicago. And my school that I was working at didn't have a music program during the day. We worked with all boys at the high school level. They were in double blocks of English, double blocks of math every day, but they had no music, they had no art. If you were not a freshman, you didn't even get gym during your school day. Mm. And I remember sitting in meetings after school with the other teachers, and they're like, "Well, they won't sit still and they won't listen." And I'm like the 22. You talked about just like a little bit of imposter syndrome with age, but I was like, maybe I'm like the young guy who's not knowledgeable enough about this, but like, isn't it obvious? Mm-hmm. Like, they don't have any creative outlets. They don't have any physical outlets during the day. They're in school for 8 hours a day, and we're worried that they can't sit still. Mm-hmm. Let's give them something to actually channel that energy into. And so I started a choir after school, and
Oh, if your teacher could see you, the one who recruited you.
Well, I actually got to, I saw her for the first time in 25 years a couple months ago. Uh-huh. I went to go see a concert of hers. And oh, she was playing her own original music. And we had kept in touch on Facebook every now and then, mm-hmm. but I actually got to tell her about mm-hmm. this in person a couple months ago. That, yeah, I started this choir and, you know, I didn't grow up here and didn't have the experience growing up that a lot of my mm-hmm. my students did. And it was one of those situations where, again, I probably would have gotten there anyway by building a relationship without music.
Right.
But the fact that we connected on so many artists that we both liked, the fact that we could all sing together, accelerated my ability to be able to build trust with them mm-hmm. and to earn their trust mm-hmm. so that when we stopped singing, we were having conversations about who they wanted to be, what their goals were, how they felt like other people saw them, mm-hmm. what some of the barriers and obstacles they faced in their daily lives were. And again, I was having this moment like, wow, this is so obvious. Like, I'm so lucky to be able to have this tool that I can use to connect with people. And so during that time, I was starting a band of my own here in the city mm-hmm. and was working on some musical and artistic endeavors in my own life and actually decided to step away from the classroom mm-hmm. To pursue that. Which I don't even know if you knew this, but
I didn't.
Well, it's because it lasted for about 4 months. and I, after about 4 months, I got a call from the founder of Guitars Over Guns. His name's Chad Bernstein. He's a trombone player who lives in Miami, but he grew up in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, we went to school together down in Miami, and he said, you know, I'm bringing this organization up here, and, you know, had heard a little bit about what I was doing. And I was like, oh, wow, this is not good timing. Like, it sounds like I was running a program that's very, very similar to what mm-hmm. what you're trying to accomplish. But I was like, I just left the classroom. And he was like, well, what are you doing now? And I was like, I'm a professional musician. And he said, well, you're going to work for me.
Mm-hmm.
So 4 months after I made this big decision that I'm going to leave the classroom, I was back in a classroom in a different school this time, but working as a vocal mentor for Guitars Over Guns. And my co-instructor, Phil, was also my bandmate. So we were two guys mm-hmm. in a rock band teaching kids mm-hmm. on the southwest side of Chicago how to be in a rock band, which honestly, like, improved our musicianship. That's where I learned how to play guitar. It's from Phil. Mm-hmm. When he was teaching lessons, I would sit in and learn myself. I had mm-hmm. like been able to noodle on the instrument, but I wanted to be able to write my own songs too, and he really helped me with that. But yeah, it elevated our musicianship and elevated our teaching skills. And yeah, I mean, when I, all throughout that first year, I was kind of recognizing that what we were doing was unique and powerful. And mm-hmm. I knew that our leadership in Miami wanted the organization to grow here. And mm-hmm. I felt like with my background as an educator and as a musician, I was tapped into the communities that we needed to mm-hmm. reach more kids and to train more musicians.
Mm-hmm.
So I took on the first regional director role in 2016. And I think then we were, you know, 8 or 9 musicians working with about 55 kids. And now this year we're 30 in Chicago musicians mm-hmm. working with about 425 kids across the city. Mm-hmm. So have seen it through a lot of, big changes and, mm-hmm. and a pandemic at that. But the same belief still holds
yeah.
true,
yeah.
that music and the arts just accelerates that ability we have to connect and build trust with one another.
Yeah. Now, Phil taught you how to play guitar, but who taught you how to play guitar?
I'm self-taught.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I had YouTube and stuff like
yeah.
that. Yeah, he also taught me a lot on, like, just chord shapes, I guess, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's just him, and we also have another mentor at Cure. His name is Mark.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like, pick up a few things with him. It's pretty,
mm-hmm.
pretty nice.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you all have, like, this network of instructor and student, but everyone is really a student because there's the opportunity to learn from everybody. Like, do you all have like any memories or experiences at the program that really stand out to really signify the impact that it's made on you?
Trying to think of, well, we always have like things going on. So every day is like, it's like every day is like a memory. Because like every day we're always like, there's always a new challenge that they give us at GOG. But picking like one's particular, do you have one?
I think, I mean, just my favorite days, this happened last week, so it's fresh in my mind. But like I mentioned, this program at Curie is a special one because we are, we're training high school age students to be the mentors, you know, of the future. And so this past Monday, we just had our first opportunity of the spring to send a group of 12 kids from Curie Metro High School to Evergreen Academy Middle School, just up Archer Avenue. And they ran a full session with a group of middle school aged kids, teaching them about their process for songwriting. We had a group doing lyric writing exercises with kids. We had a group doing music production where they were working in a program called Soundtrap to like make instrumental loops and write their own songs that way. And then there was a group of kids who were working on guitars and on live instruments to say, this is, you know, this is how I write songs with a real instrument or a live instrument in my hand. So, you know, these are kids who are 14, 15, 16 years old, like you, many of whom have been with us since they were 11 or 12, siblings of kids who have come through our program. And so for me, those are the days where you'll see me smiling the widest because I get to see them get it the way I got it. And they're doing that earlier than I did. And I think that at the end of the day, that's when mentoring is at its best.
Yeah.
It's when you get to transfer an experience a little bit further back down the road than you had it yourself.
Totally. I think it's in the title, Guitars Over Guns. But what does this type of outlet through music, what type of prevention does that help with, like, as far as society issues are concerned?
Yeah, I get asked this question a lot. And, you know, with a name like ours, like, you have to acknowledge the societal issue that we face around gun violence. And in a city like Chicago that's been notorious for it for a long time. I think that when it comes to the work that we do with kids, to have a creative outlet, to have an adult who is looking out for you, who cares for you, who's providing a safe space from within your school building during the hours where young people are most likely to be unsupervised. University of Chicago, the Crime Lab did a study a few years back to show when is the time of day that youth are most likely to be involved in violent crime. And it's between 3 and 6 in the afternoon.
Wow.
So
yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Because they leave the school building. Yeah.
No programming.
Yeah. And maybe folks aren't at home yet to be able to receive you. Maybe there's no food at home. Maybe you are going home to play video games, but somebody stops you along the way. It's like, if you don't have a plan for how you're going to spend those hours, the plan might take you. And so, I think as far as prevention work, we're trying to provide a safe space during the hours where kids have shown they need it the most. We're trying to provide an adult in their lives who can talk them through some of the challenges that they face in their daily lives. And to the point that I made earlier about myself growing up, like, if you feel like you have a purpose-driven life, I mean, for someone like you, like, there's nothing that's going to knock you off that square of wanting to do music. And if someone comes up to you and says, why don't you do something else? You're less likely to be involved. You're less likely to say yes when you know I've got something that I already care about that I do.
Totally. So I'm fascinated by this, like, this concept for a program. Like, do you understand what the founder was looking to achieve by starting this in Miami?
I think it's evolved over the, you know, this is, I think they started down there in 2009 and we picked up in 2015. I think we have a region that's uniquely, and I'm on the headquarters team now, so but I'm still Chicago, you know. Sure. So I think we have through a region and through and through. I think we have a region that is uniquely ours. But I think we've grown and evolved over the course of the last, you know, few years particularly. Really specifically in our understanding of diversity, equity, and inclusiveness, and how the arts is kind of a springboard for that work. And particularly in 2020, like understanding the importance of, you know, when we think about the music that we work on together, it's rock music, it's R&B, it's hip hop, it's Latin music. So it's all music that's rooted in the experiences of people of color. We try and reflect that with the mentors that we hire and also at like levels of leadership in the organization. And so in Chicago specifically, about 70% of the 30 musicians that we employ are Black or Latinx. Mm-hmm. And about 50% of them graduated from Chicago Public Schools themselves. I am not one of those people, but my goal is for you to see as many examples as you can of people who are just a few years down the road. And you know, it's hard to be what you can't see. So
totally. Who were some of the artists that inspire you?
I'm inspired a lot by Choker. This is R&B synthwave kind of artist. Choker, Frank Ocean, Dominic Fike. Just off the top of my head. Those are like my top three. Mm-hmm.
He put me on to Dominic Fike. He's pretty good. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I don't think he needs promotion from me, but for what it's worth, like, check him out.
Okay. And how about you? Who are some of your...
You know some of mine.
I know. They don't know.
Yeah, they don't know. I mean, for me, the Beatles, Stevie Wonder, the Beach Boys, Marvin Gaye, Aretha Franklin. I mean... Lauryn Hill, like all just strong voices, inspire me a lot. But yeah, when I was a kid, I was actually just thinking about this the other day, just like I was 10 years old when I first saw a clip of the Beatles playing live. And I had that same moment as you where I was like, yep, that's the thing that I've been like thinking about in my head, but I've never seen on a screen. To watch four guys who like, loved making music, but also loved each other, that's the reason why I want to do this too.
So in my house, my parents played some of everybody, but that's not where I heard the Beatles.
Where'd you hear?
I heard the Beatles from my driver's ed instructor, Mr. Tucker.
So he was DJ while you were practicing driving?
Okay. Yes. And when I tell you every single lesson he played the Beatles, and so even when I listen to the Beatles now, I still associate the Beatles with learning how to drive.
Do your palms get sweaty? Do you like get nervous? You're like, I got a parallel park.
You know what's funny is that I found it easier to learn how to drive from Mr. Tucker than I did my parents.
Really?
Because he was so like, he was listening to the music, he was fine, like we're coasting along, you know, and like this drive around the school, and I don't know, we had enough time to listen to maybe six songs, and it tend to be the same six songs every time. But he was so caught up, I think, in the music that I wasn't nervous in driving. Now my parents was a completely different story, but in learning how to drive, that's where, so I listen to their music even now. And I still connect their music with learning how to drive.
Yeah.
And it's typically where I find their music soothing when I've accepted a new challenge that I'm learning how to navigate.
Interesting.
It's so interesting. And I did not know that music had this ability to inform the season soundtracks, right? Are you familiar with soundtracks?
Remind me.
Okay. So movies, like long time ago, movies would have a soundtrack that, like, you know, and so some of the best soundtracks, like Babyface has produced, and Quincy Jones, and you know, other producers. But see, like, being able to associate music with different seasons in my life is like my own life soundtrack. So, like, who are some of the artists on your life soundtrack?
Oh, man.
I can tell you one, because you broke this down in our... So we participated in this program that U Chicago has called the Civic Actor Studio. And we were partners in the very first exercise. And you gave me the name that the nuns used to call you.
That's right. So, I grew up in an Italian-American household. And my last name is DeMuro, which translates literally to Off the Wall, which is a Michael Jackson album. And so I grew up like identifying with that album specifically. That would definitely be on my soundtrack. And for authority figures that I grew up around, Andrew Off the Wall was like a little moniker for me that when I had too much energy, people would be like, oh, well, that's why, So yeah, I mean, any song on that record is part of my soundtrack for sure.
Mm-hmm. How about you? What artist or what song might be on your life soundtrack?
I always associated The Wallows. I don't know if you guys really are familiar with them, but they have this song called Remember When. And this song is just like, when I first heard it, I was like, If my life was a movie, like, this would be the starting of it. Like, it's just so, like, upbeat. It just feels great. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be probably...
That is a good opening credits versus closing credits. Like, what would your songs be? Mm-hmm. I think that changes for me. I've had, like, a very clear idea of what that's been.
I think mine changes.
But I think it changes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you have a soundtrack staple?
So I do.
Okay.
My soundtrack staple is Stevie Wonder's "As."
And that's probably my closing credits.
There's
song.
A lyric. There's a lyric in the song that says, "As today, I know I'm living, but tomorrow could make me the past, but that I mustn't fear. Yeah. For I'll know deep in my mind the love of me I've left behind.
I'll be loving you always."
Like. That lyric Woo!
I'm getting I'm like freezing on this couch.
That lyric for me surmises the entry and exit points of different people who have made an impact in my life. And what it signifies is like they may have come to deposit something, they may have come to receive something, but whatever the case, like it has to be done in love. Mm-hmm. And this, you didn't ask this, but like I tend to remove myself when there is no reciprocity in that type of relationship. Mm-hmm. Not that, every exchange you got to get something out of it, but I firmly believe that we're here to add value to each other. Mm-hmm. And if we don't create the type of environment that makes that possible, where will that leave us? So that leads me to my next question. Like, what song do you all think needs to be like society's own soundtrack? And you can take any issue that that we're presently facing, but like, what song do you think needs to be a part of society's soundtrack?
It's hard. It's really
I know. and you already gave the best answer, in my opinion. So As is my favorite. My favorite non-Beatles song mm-hmm. of all time. And I love it for a very similar reason that you mentioned. I think that, all of those lyrics, the ones earlier mm-hmm. are about, just as time knew to move on yes. since the beginning, yes. the seasons know exactly when yes. to change. Kindness knows no shame. Through all your joy and pain, yes. I'll be loving you always. To me, that's like, what he's communicating there is love. Love is as natural as breathing. Mm. Mm-hmm. It's as natural as time moving on. It's mm-hmm. as natural as a season changing. We don't ever ask, like, well, why is it autumn right now? Mm-hmm. Like, why was it summer before and it's winter now? Mm-hmm. We don't ask because we just understand it to be true. And what if love was also that natural to the human mm-hmm. condition? I just don't think there's a stronger message in any in any other song. I also love from that same record, Love's in Need of Love Today. Mm-hmm. I think that's also just a beautiful, I don't know, just like a gospel song, an R&B song. I mean, it's everything. And I think the message is kind of the same. Like, what do you want to show love in the world? What better time is there than now?
How about you?
I forgot who originally made this. It's on the tip of my tongue, but the song is called Godspeed.
Mm-hmm. It's Frank Ocean.
No, but Frank Ocean didn't make it.
He didn't?
He covered it.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
I only know his version.
Well, so maybe if I don't want to be wrong, but in the song, it talks about, he has this lyric that says, wishing you Godspeed, glory. And me and Andrew talked about this. That's like his favorite lyric. I feel like
there will be mountains you don't move.
There will be mountains you don't move. I feel like I feel like people need to just learn that love can be like unconditional. Like wishing you Godspeed, even though you're like we don't speak. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be about anybody. Mm-hmm. It could be about a friend. It can be about a relationship. It could be like about like family and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like just wishing somebody the best can be as powerful as anything.
Totally.
Can I throw one more in there for good measure? Okay, because I kind of stole yours with
ass. It's all good. I got two more.
You got two more? Yeah, okay. My next one is For All We Know, Donny Hathaway.
Oh.
Which is just his voice and a piano. Yeah. And if maybe, I mean, Stevie's up there, but the best natural voice I've ever heard.
Totally.
I think Donny Hathaway.
It was very rich.
Very rich. Yeah. And that lyric as well is very, so for all we know, we may never meet again. So love me tonight. Tomorrow is made for some. Tomorrow may never come mm-hmm. for all we know.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just like, well, so much of it is the emotion that he brings to the performance as well. But just this idea of like, we are here for but a moment. We are ripples in the stream. So love as deeply and as intensely as you can mm-hmm. for the time that you have.
Yeah, yeah. It's so the common thread though, is that whatever songs that we add to society's soundtrack, love is at the core of
it. Love's the ingredient.
Indeed. And so, this love that you all have for music, I know, and this is so funny because I was driving the other day and this song came on the radio and it reminded me of when I first fell in love with music. So would always listen to like whatever my parents played, but it wasn't until I bought my parents gave me a CD player for Christmas.
Great gift.
Yeah. With a tape deck, mind you.
Gotta have both. You still have, what are we going to do with all these
tapes?
What
are we even doing?
Yeah.
So they gave me this CD player. And at the time, when albums were, when CDs were released, it was like on Tuesdays, like your big drop
music
day.
Music Tuesday.
So my father would get the newspaper on Sunday. And the Best Buy ads would be in there. And I would identify what CDs I wanted. Give my mother my little allowance to go pick up the CDs I wanted. So TLC, Aaliyah, whomever, right?
$14.99.
At the time, I did not listen to rap music.
Okay.
And also at the time, The Box was really popular. So if you remember, you could call in and, you know, request whatever music video you want to see. They would charge you and it would go on your phone bill. So my mother gets the phone bill and it's really high because someone has been calling requesting Thuggish Ruggish Bone by Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Oh my God.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. My mother was so mad. She took my CD player. This is where I learned to advocate for myself. She took my CD player. And I'm just like, because I don't listen to rap at the time. And I'm like, but I didn't do it. Like, I don't even listen to this kind of music. Like, you see the kind of CDs that I have. And like, at the time they were like pop and R&B or whatever. Sure. And it clicked. And it turns out my brother was the one who called requesting the song.
Wow, I thought it was going to be you the whole time.
It wasn't me. Okay. No.
All right. Shout out to Bone Thugs Harmony.
No. Exactly. But I didn't start listening to rap maybe until
that day.
No.
Like, forget it. I'm in now.
Yeah. No, I didn't start listening to rap maybe like sophomore year of high school or something like that.
Okay.
So it was a little ways from then. But I'm sharing that to say, like, even back to your song, the Donny Hathaway song, like, I would have to clean the kitchen after dinner and would listen to my mother's CDs and to connect with those artists. So now as I'm listening to artists that I like and I'm hearing their samples, I didn't appreciate it a ton.
Yeah.
But it got to a point where I appreciated the palette that those artists have to be able to dig in the crates and pull out such gems like Marvin Gaye and Donny Hathaway and Roberta Flack. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so who have been some of the artists whose like musical palettes, like, you just absolutely like are inspired by?
When you say musical palettes, do you mean like their taste
their
in music?
Their taste in music and how they use it.
Kanye
West.
So can I just say that I have had to learn how to separate, right?
Yeah.
I forget what song it was, but I was listening to this Al Green song, and when I heard it, a portion of it, I'm like, how did this man know to sample this part?
Yeah, I don't know. You know? I don't know.
Go ahead, Danny.
No, I was just going to say that, do you mean like the artists that influenced me, the artists that inspired them?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, if they inspire me or
who has like the musical knowledge or taste? So it might be a producer, right?
Right.
So Quincy Jones is probably another one,
yeah,
right? Yeah. Literally knows everyone and just knows what sounds good. It's a tough question because artists don't always reveal that about themselves. I don't think.
But I think you have to know music,
I guess,
to explore it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I look at when it comes to like music, I just really look at like, I just listen to it. I guess I don't really go into that deep with like that type of stuff, but it's a really tough question.
It's a very tough question.
I'm gonna tell you another producer, and I just watched, this was a documentary about him on Netflix, David Foster. He arranged Whitney Houston's version of I Will Always Love You.
Okay.
And the documentary opens up and he talks about how he has like 8 summers. Like, for the life that he's lived, he's got about 8 summers. And he's older in age, but he's like, he's got about 8 summers. And to listen to him share like his background, where he came from, his own experiences, how his parents invested in his success, the things that like celebrity has cost him. It's like music was that one thing that frankly just kept him going. Like, are there students that you all work with who clearly music is what helps to keep them going?
I kind of think you're one of them.
Delani,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I think there are a few kids that you know I don't know. Like, yeah, I mean, well,
I feel like everybody's like has like a place. Does that make sense? Like,
say what you mean.
I think everybody's like has a really big passion when it comes to the whole program and stuff like that.
How does that show though? How does that, in what way does that, like, how do you know that? By showing up? I mean, that's rule number one.
Totally.
Same goes for me. got to show up.
You got to show up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I think about the value of, when I think about the ripple effects of what an after school program can provide too, like I think about myself in high school, and there were days where I would go to school so that I could stay after school, mm-hmm. so that they wouldn't turn me away mm-hmm. at the door at 2:30 mm-hmm. when I tried to show up and was like, yeah, I wasn't in school today, but can I still go to rehearsal? Mm-hmm. When it comes to music being the thing that helps you hang on, like, you know, I think about, you know, your path through high school hasn't exactly been linear either. No. You've had some twists and turns, some ups and downs, mm-hmm. but when I call him and say, we're doing a podcast with Jamira Alexander on Saturday, but not unless you're in school all week. Like,
You went to school to sit here with me?
Yeah, I did.
I'm very selective about the details totally. I provide. You know, I try and keep something totally. Secretive.
It's gotta be
so
enticing.
So that there's something to show up for. But
I was really excited for that too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, so I think for kids like you who are ready for opportunities like this, I think that's, you know, whether it's here on a couch with Jamira or downtown at the Metropolitan playing a gig or, you know, whatever opportunities you've had over the last couple of years, you're learning your way around the music industry in a way that can provide you with whatever your next step is going to be, whether that's college, whether that's a career, whether that's, you know, a job somewhere else. Like, the part of what we believe is that these skills that musicians practice on a daily mm-hmm. basis, mm-hmm. nonverbal communication, teamwork, totally. Discipline, totally, practice, yeah. these, you know, the ability to get up in front of a crowd and say something mm-hmm. that matters to you, mm-hmm. that's a transferable skill. Mm-hmm. Whatever you're going to do in life, totally. You're probably going to run into that.
Yeah, I don't think if you would have got me, like, before GOG and stuff like that and told me, like, oh, we're going to do, like or put me, like, on a podcast or something like that, I would definitely not have been as ready as...
I wouldn't have asked you mm-hmm. until recently because he didn't always show up, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. I think there was a little bit of a...
I was very unorganized. I was very lacking, like, what my priorities were mm-hmm. and people, they just like helped me really like you got to do this. They helped me with deadlines. They do that a lot in mm-hmm. in GOG with deadlines. They would give us an assignment to make a song with like a group or yourself or like do something with a song, and it would be due like in like a week or like a two. Or like mm-hmm. the next week, like something like that. Mm-hmm. I would always, you could even ask Andrew, I would always have it like, I would always like finish it like that same day that was like we were going to present it. Mm-hmm. Or like the day before. I would always.
You would start it the same day.
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah, I would,
and that's, yeah. that's the gift is that you can work fast. Mm-hmm. That may not be your best work.
It probably wasn't, to be honest, but, yeah. but I mean, I got it done.
Yes, and now we're working on
the quality.
Yeah, using all the time that you've been given mm-hmm. to make the best work that you can.
Yeah. Also, with the apparently it was Godspeed was Frank Ocean, but the was James Blake. James mm-hmm. Blake was the one that covered it, mm-hmm. and I heard his version first.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I thought he made it, mm-hmm. but it was actually Blake, so. Mm-hmm. My bad.
No, all good.
We've got a corrections office right here. I had a public narrative podcast.
Totally, totally.
He doesn't know his Frank Ocean, like.
No, this is really, really interesting. It takes me back to, I remember, like, I don't want to say the early 2000s. I think it was a little later than that. Somewhere around maybe like 2009 or 10. VH1 used to talk about, have this campaign around Save the Music because music programs mm-hmm. were being cut. Like, how has GOG been like developed in response to that early on? Or, you know, in what, like, how do you all engage students at schools? Like, how can schools sign up for your program? Or, what does that, any of that look like?
So we are fortunate to partner with two pretty important organizations here in the city. One's called Communities and Schools. Mm-hmm. The other is called Ingenuity. Mm-hmm. Ingenuity is kind of the like arts firm that drives like continued access to the arts for kids in Chicago public schools. So they ensure that there's an arts liaison positioned at every school. They collect data from schools every year to see how many full-time arts positions do you have available in your school, how many minutes of arts education are kids receiving each year. And they give scores to schools based on those numbers. And what Communities and Schools does is they provide like a network of no-cost programming options to principals who can say, I'm looking for an arts program, or I'm looking for a mentoring program, or I'm looking for a program that focuses on SEL. And they get a short list that includes our name on it. And then they're able to reach out to us and say, this sounds like, you know, the type of program that would work well at my school. I will say where we've seen a lot of success is actually in schools where we are able to partner with an in-house music or arts teacher who is full-time at the school, but maybe they're on their own.
Sure.
Maybe they're seeing kindergartners and eighth graders on the same day, and they want to start something after school, but they're just not sure where to start or where to find the time. What we provide to schools like that is practitioners who are specialists in their instrument areas. So we survey kids before we go in to partner with them and ask, what kind of music do you already like? What maybe have you never been exposed to before that you would like to learn? And so we take that data and we put a team together. If kids say, I want to learn, I love rapping, I love playing drums, and I would love to learn how to play the piano. Then we try and find a piano player, an MC, and a drummer to team up and go into that school and really specialize in those areas. So we provide that in environments where maybe a music teacher is a singer, or maybe a music teacher is a guitar player or a piano player, but they don't do it all. And then all of our artists are trained in social emotional learning techniques as well. They are equipped with curricular resources that guide them through a year. In just a couple of weeks over spring break, something that we do every year is we get all of our kids together to make a music video and to visit a professional recording studio. So we provide opportunities throughout the year to expose kids to options in the music industry that maybe they just hadn't been aware of before. But yeah, schools are able to reach out to us and partner in those ways. And our goal is always to create year over year relationships so that we can watch kids grow through some of the most formative years of their their childhoods.
Well, that's so awesome. How can folks learn more about connecting with GLG?
So we're on all the social media platforms at Guitars with an S, Guitars Over Guns. You know, guitarsoverguns.org is our website. On our YouTube channel in particular, I think some of the coolest stuff that we have like on file is over the course of the pandemic, we did a series called Go-Go in the House, which was all of our musicians and some students as well performing live music in their homes, and we would do themed
through Zoom. Cool.
Oh, I remember that.
We would do themed showcases. So we had a Stevie Wonder night, we had a Beatles night, we had a Women in Music night during Women's History Month in 2021. So lots of really great, and we would have some special guests on as well. So lots of really great content there. We also put out an album in 2021 called The Rain May Be Pouring, which was we commissioned some of our musicians and students to write original music during the pandemic that was reflective of whatever their experience was at the time. And that's available on all of our streaming platforms and on YouTube as well. And I, you know, of all of the, you know, kind of fallout that we're still navigating from that very, very challenging time, that's a beautiful memory that we have that's very authentic and is, you know, reflective of the stories of
the
people closest to our work during that during that time.
Yeah, excellent. Anything else you want to add?
How do they find you?
Just through Instagram. My Instagram is YKKDanny with just one Y, D-A-N-N-Y. And I probably you probably catch me on GOG too. So
it's very presumptuous of you, but maybe
maybe.
Well, thank you both for being here. I really enjoyed this conversation. I'm going to be continue to think about like songs that need to be on society's playlist. Mm-hmm. But thank you so much for coming and sharing your love of music.
Really thank you for having us.
Appreciate the work you all do.
Thank you, Jameera. Yeah.
And thank you for joining us for the Public Narrative Podcast with Jameera Alexander.